So I am only half joking when I say that the readings for today are proof that the editors of the Revised Common Lectionary hate preachers. For one, in today's story from the book of Job, God permits Satan to afflict Job with loathsome sores to test Job's integrity. For another, in today's story from Mark's gospel, Jesus prohibits divorce, with one commentator going so far as to claim that this saying represents Jesus's absolute prohibition of divorce. Like the Old Testament prophets, Jesus does not temper his command with situational conditions, but announces the absolute will of God. While the Torah permits divorce, the Torah also prohibits adultery. By defining divorce as facilitating adultery, Jesus shows that divorce is, in fact, a violation of God's will revealed in the Torah. Now, whenever the church has interpreted this command as a hard and fast rule for all time, it has done a lot of harm. There have been people who have been counseled or coerced into remaining with their abusers. There have been couples trapped in loveless marriages. And those who had the audacity to get divorced anyway were often ostracized by the church. Jesus says, "Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her, and if she divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery." If this is a hard and fast rule for all time, then that means that the Anglican Church of Canada is in direct violation of Jesus's express command, because we permit the remarriage of divorced persons. And it wouldn't surprise me if most, if not all of us here today, would rather side with the church than with Jesus on this one. If we leave out the part of today's story from Mark's gospel where Jesus welcomes teaching, children, I mean, and instead focus on his teaching about divorce, we could be forgiven if we feel that there is no good news to be found in this story at all. But once we understand more of the context surrounding this story, however, we begin to see that there is a reason for why Jesus says what he does. Let's take another look at Jesus' debate with the Pharisees about divorce. According to the story from Mark's gospel, some Pharisees came, and to test him, they asked, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?" He answered them, "What did Moses command you?" They said, "Moses allowed a man to write a certificate of dismissal and to divorce her." The command to which the Pharisees refer is from a speech attributed to Moses that he gives to the Israelites as they are about to enter the promised land in the book of Deuteronomy. Moses says, "Suppose a man enters into marriage with a woman, but she does not please him because he finds something objectionable about her. And so he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house." Notice how it is only the husband who has the right to divorce his wife. This is because in the society in which Jesus lived, and for a long time before that, women were not persons in the legal sense of the word as we understand it. They were more like property. A woman usually belonged to one man or another, to her father until she got married, and after her marriage to her husband. Divorced women, like widows, were vulnerable, for they had no legal standing because they were not connected with a male protector. Notice also how vague the grounds for divorce are in this passage from Deuteronomy. All it says is that the man may divorce his wife if she does not please him because he finds something objectionable about her. In Jesus' day, there was debate as to how to interpret the phrase something objectionable. The more hardline view was that only sexual misconduct constituted grounds for divorce. The more liberal view, so to speak, was that anything that displeased the husband was sufficient ground for divorce. On this view, a man could divorce his wife, as one of the participants in Tuesday evening's Bible study pointed out, over something as trivial as that she ruined the meal. And even finding a more attractive woman was reason enough. So women had no right to initiate divorce and no legal standing once divorced. And that could be for any reason whatsoever. A divorced woman would have to rely on either being welcomed back into her birth family's household or on remarrying. Otherwise, she was vulnerable to exploitation. So arguably, what Jesus is doing by prohibiting divorce is providing a safeguard for women who could be left seriously disadvantaged after a divorce. You could say that what Jesus is actually prohibiting is the arbitrary and selfish abuse of power by men over women. In other words, Jesus is doing what he always does, which is to seek justice for the vulnerable and marginalized. What Jesus is doing is responding to a pastoral need. If we look at what Jesus says in this story in this way, we can interpret what he says as a call for integrity and justice in relationships. As for what Jesus says about remarriage being adultery, this can be interpreted to mean that Jesus is opposing divorce for the purpose of marrying someone else. That is, he is rejecting what we might call an instrumentalist way of behaving, in which other people, including one's own spouse, are treated as little more than means to the end of self-gratification. Jesus' aim is to protect women who were marginalized in his society. And this connects his teaching about divorce with his welcoming of children in the second part of today's story from Mark's Gospel. In both cases, Jesus is caring for little ones, those who are weak and vulnerable. So there remains the question of how we are to reinterpret Jesus' teaching for our own day. If we regard Jesus' teaching about divorce as a response to a pastoral need in his context, then we need not interpret it as a hard and fast rule for all time. And even the commentator who called Jesus' teaching an absolute prohibition of divorce acknowledges that this radical ethical demand must be interpreted pastorally in each situation without losing sight of the ultimate will of God it represents. That means that we are free to reinterpret Jesus' teaching to fit the pastoral needs of our own day. And indeed, we can see such reinterpretation at work elsewhere in the New Testament. Matthew's Gospel, for instance, changes what Jesus says in order to permit divorce in the case of unchastity. Meanwhile, the Apostle Paul, in his first letter to the Corinthians, even cites Jesus' prohibition of divorce, yet goes on to permit divorce between believing and unbelieving spouses anyway. The early church clearly did not view Jesus' teaching about divorce as a hard and fast rule for all time. So it is a relief to know that we need not interpret Jesus' teaching about divorce as though he were, as one commentator points out, telling a battered woman that she and her children must risk physical and psychological torment every day just to avoid a divorce. Far from it. By prohibiting divorce, Jesus intended to protect women. Paradoxically, we can honor that intent by permitting it. Jesus' purpose was to protect the marginalized and preserve the integrity of relationships. That means that how we deal with divorce and remarriage in our society must do the same.